Welcome, folks, here. Let's begin with a public hearing on House Bill 3770. Welcome back, Representative Butler, who is going to tell us about his amendments on this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I want to acknowledge Ed Waters for the work that he's done to assist me in making sure that everything does what it's supposed to do, and I would turn some time to him if that would be all right.
Yes, sure. Ed?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Butler. House Bill 3770, as you remember, is an exemption for new facilities located in certain regions in the state. The Dash 5 amendment, which should be distributed, replaced the original bill. But actually what they do are a few minor things compared with the way the original bill was structured or intended to be structured. It changes the or condition regarding unemployment rate and personal income, per capita personal income, to and, so that both conditions must be met. As Representative Butler explained at our last hearing, he intended the original bill to be structured that way. It changes the percentile grouping for eligibility from quintile in the original bill to quartile, so it basically makes those circles potentially a little bit bigger, but now requires that they overlap, and that area of overlap is the eligible set. And it makes another technical change. It changes reference to median family income, I think, in the original bill to per capita personal income, which is something the U.S. Department of Commerce tracks and publishes regularly.
Ed, on that point, I'm looking on the Dash 5, line 24, and then up to the first page, and then the top of page 2, it appears to refer still to per capita personal income. So where is the change made?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think the original language in the original bill before it was amended referred to county medium.
Oh, okay, income. Okay. I guess I got you saying, I understood, yes. You say the change went the other way. Okay.
Right. Went from county median income to per capita
Person
income.
Okay. That's a more conventionally measurable. Identifiable?
I think so, Mr. Chair. A little easier to monitor.
Representative Butler, do you want to address these?
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. This bill is extremely important, I think, to rural Oregon. Again, I come back and measure what it does within small communities. I think I've talked to each one of you that this is aimed at cities in distressed areas where we have high unemployment and low per capita personal income, where the cities are less than 10,000 people, figuring that cities that already have 10,000 people or more should not need substantial new jobs necessarily. However, that would not preclude cities counties where cities that had more than 10,000 people from having folks move in to assuming that they met the qualification, they were concentric overlap, that the folks could move into some of those rural counties or those counties that had the high unemployment and the low per capita median personal income. It also is directed at not trying to knock out existing businesses. There's non-competition with existing businesses is substantially, when the business is substantially identical. It has the city and the county commissioners, as well as the regional development officer, and there is a fee in there for the Oregon Economic Development Department, Community and Economic Development Department, up to $500 that can be charged to qualify a business to take care of the necessary paperwork, and they must go ahead and make investments within that community in property, plant, and equipment with lifes or leases of 10 years or more. And then they must continue to employ full-time employees of 10 or more full-time employees at 150% of that per capita income or at 100% plus the full medical benefits, and the medical benefits are defined as those which are being paid by the municipality within the city or within the county at the employer's choosing. And finally, the regional development officer would determine annually, and that's these are all changes which now have been codified in part of the Dash 5 amendments, that they the exemption for tax exemption with regard to this business would be for not more than 10 consecutive years from the date the facility is put in service, so that if the folks pulled out of business midway through or were unable to identify that they could continue to employ 10 or more full-time employees, then at that particular point they would lose their qualification. And even though they may be able to continue and enhance in business, increase in business at a later time, they would have lost the opportunity to take advantage of the tax-free nature of the income under this bill as provided. And by way of recognition, again, the work that Ed Waters from Legislative Revenue has done, I want to recognize that Lake County, Morrow County, Wheeler County, and Wallowa County are counties that would qualify presently. I couldn't get Mountaineer County to ever qualify, and I was having trouble getting Lake County to qualify. So I'm glad that someone finally got it figured out that at least one of the areas of southeastern Oregon that is in my district is in distress. Families in the lowest quartile include Gilliam County, Lake County, Mountaineer County, Morrow County, Sherman County, Wallowa County, and Wheeler County, but those counties may have employment figures that are large enough that they would not be in the overlapping concentric circles.
Thank you. Any questions? No questions, Bob? Representative Witt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Butler, what's the reason of limiting the application to cities of less than 10,000 people?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Witt. This bill, I did not want it to be self-serving to Ontario, Oregon, in the event that Mountaineer County would qualify. I also had the opinion that a city of 10,000 or more employee or 10,000 or more must have an employment base where they're not struggling on a regular basis. They may certainly be within a county that has some struggling, but I want to be able to use the infrastructure within other small cities and towns within those counties, as opposed to continuing to put the emphasis and additional pressure and burden on cities of 10,000 or more.
Okay. Representative Butler, I was looking at the fiscal analysis, and it talks about the Economic and Community Development Department costs that would be incurred through the program, and I was wondering if you had seen that or had comments about how this would work through that department.
Well, I would like to have OECDD come forward and explain that, because I do have $500 for anyone that sets up or attempts to set up under this kind of a program, and $100 for the annual, and this is the first that I'd seen that it had this kind of a fiscal impact. Okay.
Chair Carlson, I'm Mike Burton, Assistant Director of the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department. We put together a fiscal impact on fairly short notice, and given the amendments we just heard about, this is kind of our outside guess at how far things might go. Our more realistic expectation based on current business creation in the four counties is that there would be 7 potentially qualified businesses in the four counties in a given year, at which point the fiscal impact would be trivial. And on a case-by-case basis, we think Representative Butler's assertions that the fees that he's put into the bill and will allow us to charge would cover those costs. Mm-hmm. Our concern is that if the program works really well, it gets to the place where it starts generating significant amounts of work, we might need to hire someone on a limited duration basis until the next session and look at staffing a position. But our preliminary estimation is that's a pretty remote possibility.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is it possible that we could end up with fiscal impact on the department that is greater than the taxes that are being saved? by the qualifying and approved taxpayers?
Chair Carlson, Representative Witt, I suppose it's possible. We believe that the fee structure would cover those, the fiscal impact.
All right, and put another way, is it possible that fees paid could end up being greater than the taxes that otherwise would be due?
Chair Carlson, Representative Witt, I could only guess on that. I think it's unlikely, but it is possible.
Well, what we're talking about here is we're talking about the business income tax, right, that is being exempted for 10 years.
Right, although Representative Butler might be able to respond to this, that we're not only looking at business income tax, we're also looking at the jobs that are being brought into the community and the personal taxes that people would pay on that as well. Is that not correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Witt, members of the committee, again, I stand in awe that that we've got that potential cost here, roll-up cost in the next biennium of $111,000. With $79,900 in this particular biennium. I had anticipated that what I wanted to do was to enhance, again, the enhanced enterprise zone. I don't know how much we've geared up to accommodate the enhanced enterprise zone, but that, over the last quite a number of years, there's only been one business that's ever taken advantage of that, and that takes up page after page after page of current Oregon revised statutes. So whatever we've got under that is, as far as I'm concerned, wasted energy. But I'll tell you this right now. If this does, in fact, have a $79,900 fiscal impact, this bill may well be trash, because I did not anticipate that there should be any such impact to the state. I do not want to have a fiscal impact to the state. I think that to be able to attract businesses to rural communities and to use the infrastructure, which is already in place, and to use the regional development officers, which are already garnering over $60,000 in base wage right now per person, plus all of the fringe benefits and so forth, I figured those guys could do it and qualify these businesses for well under the $500 that I put in for estimated fiscal impact. So I just proffer to you that I think all of the infrastructure is already in place. The folks are already there. They're already doing the job. I know this for a fact, that in Niger County, if Niger County should ever fall into this, or Lake County, as it presently does show that for April, Lake County would have fallen into the concentric circles, I can assure you that what would happen is that the regional development officer, Larry Holzgang, over in Klamath Falls, already has a list of everybody that would ever consider coming to Lake County, either one of the two towns. There's only two towns in Lake County, Paisley and Lakeview. And he's got a list of those people who have inquired and who he's tried to attract. This would just make his job that much easier, because all of a sudden then he is working with a real live patient at that particular point. So again, I'm aghast at what I'm reading, that there could be $79,000 worth of fiscal impact, and that is not what I intended in any way, shape, or form.
Yes, ma'am.
Chair Carlson, Representative Witt, if I may. Our estimation of $79,000 is based on one full-time equivalent. Our outside guess at the busiest we could possibly get would be one full-time equivalent position. We don't expect anything like that. And we expect that the revenues generated by the fee structure that Representative Butler's in the bill would cover that impact. This would not be from lottery proceeds or general fund proceeds. So we believe that the more likely case is something like potentially seven qualified businesses. We don't know what those businesses pay. We don't know whether or not they have competition. None of those seven businesses may actually trigger this exemption. So we're saying at the wildest outside range of possibilities, we could be talking one full-time equivalent spread over a number of staff.
Well, I just checked with Mr. Waters, and there's not a subsequent referral to Ways and Means attached to this bill. So I'm assuming that we're not going into work session today. We'll probably be doing that. Did he say tomorrow? Anyway, the chair will put it on again, and in that time, perhaps Representative Butler will have a conversation with people from the department and the Dash 5 fiscal impact statement can get fashioned accordingly.
Madam Chair.
Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. At $500 per application, am I reading that correct? To cover this fiscal impact, we'd have to have 80 to 90 applications per year. You really believe that's likely?
No,
I don't think it's anywhere near that.
I don't either.
So at $500, I mean, we might get, what, 20 applications, maybe?
I think that's a possibility.
It's not going to cover this presumed fiscal impact at all. I mean, the 10 applications is $5,000 per year, $10,000 per biennium. So, I mean, I think I heard you say that the fees would cover the fiscal impact.
Chair Carlson, Representative Witt, if we were to have a fiscal impact like this, we'd have to have way more businesses qualify and be certified than we reasonably can expect. This is an outside shot.
Right.
We believe that it's going to be more like, I would be surprised if you didn't 10 or 20 businesses. But if it works as an incentive, it could be something like that, in which case the fiscal impact would be
minimum times
500, and would be covered by the fee structure. We don't see a drain to the state resources to cover this program.
I'm sorry for coming late at another meeting.
Welcome.
Thank you. And I wonder if you've looked at the impact of what those jobs mean as far as revenue coming to the state, as far as income tax produced by the individuals. Working there, 10, 20, 30 individuals working will produce significant revenue for the state from the point of income tax, and what that might do to offset the cost of this program.
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, I have it on fairly decent authority that for every $1 million of additional payroll that is generated, there'd be $44,000 of additional returned general fund to the state. And in addition, in addition to that, and recognize these are the bottom end jobs; these are the unemployed, and so that's why it's only 4.4% being returned back to the general fund. The other issue is that they're also these folks would qualify then for the insurance at municipal, whatever the city or county was providing, if that's what the employer chose to provide them in lieu of 150% of that personal median income. So this would also be a shock absorber and take up some impact off of the Oregon Health Plan, the Oregon Medical Assistance Program. And so we've got some other benefits, not to mention the fact that there's a tremendous social impact getting these folks back to work as soon as they possibly can be. So, and these are good long-term jobs. I don't want jobs that would be here today and gone tomorrow, nor do I want an enterprise that says after 2 years, because they're investing in property, plant, and equipment, or signing leases for property up to 10 years. I don't want folks to come in after 2 years and say, gee, we didn't make a profit in year one, and year two didn't pan out quite as high as we figured it would. We're leaving the community. I would like to have these folks really invest in the community, and that's why I believe that regional development officers who already have lists of folks who have inquired about these communities, and it's perfectly imaginable that there would be other folks that would be looking at Oregon and saying, we would like to come to Oregon with that particular business if we could locate in a location where we knew that perhaps they had the buildings and raw materials. Again, within Lake County, which this was the first time I'd seen Lake County actually qualify, within Lake County, there's quite a deposit of diatomaceous and some other types of materials, raw materials, which could attract the diatomite type business into that area, which Armstrong Tiles or someone else who doesn't presently have a presence within the state of Oregon could come and they could actually set up. We've got a business incubator in Lake County, which ever since it was built years and years ago has remained substantially empty. I would love to have somebody come in and say, I'm in the tile business. I'm moving to Oregon. It's a business that we're already in Nevada or in California or Colorado or somewhere else, and we think we can make a profit there because there's a lot of good employees in Lakeview, and there's a railroad there and those kinds of things. So I strongly believe that everything is presently in place, and it should not cost us any great amounts of money to bring these businesses online.
Great. Representative Beck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the macro question, 48 hours ago, I was in Paisley having a late lunch and drove around town. So I'm envisioning revisiting my experience of 2 days ago. I guess, Tom, how do you reconcile this type of subsidy, social engineering, if you will, with those people, perhaps maybe even you, who espouse free market goals, talk on floors of legislative bodies about the magic of the marketplace and free market economy. I mean, this clearly is almost, you know, it's a form of socialism that exists throughout our system. But I'm just curious how, because I generally support what you're trying to do here. I'm very sensitive, and I see, look at a place like Paisley, vacant mill site, and, you know, great opportunity there. But I'm just curious, I'm curious how, what allows you to break over that barrier of and into more of a social engineering mode from a free market mode.
Madam Chair, Representative Beck, members of the committee, let me say this, that these, because this is new business to Oregon, business which presently does not exist in Oregon, it would be in a method of saying, as I referred to the Enhanced Enterprise Zone, a piece of legislation many years old which has been able to attract one business to move around within Oregon for a tax benefit. This is a single piece of opportunity for these folks to within a very simple formula, to go ahead and come to the state of Oregon, bring their business to the state of Oregon, and put these good people in Paisley to work, and put at least 10 of them, and maybe 12 to 15 of them, in a single business. And so far as socially engineering, basically what it does is it doesn't social engineer as much as it does attempts to attract new business to Oregon and put our people back to work, which people have basically, through no fault of their own, living within the community and born and raised there, maybe have lost their ranch job because of ranch prices, maybe have lost their mill job because of the lack of the operating of the mills. Through no fault of their own, they're unemployed. But they deserve to be employed. They deserve to be employed at a living wage and have the insurance benefits and those kinds of things. And that's what this does. This attempts to leave them within the community, and right now, rather than continue to draw unemployment or to continue to look through the system to provide any kind of a benefit relative to the Oregon Medical Assistance Program and those kinds of things, it moves them into the system so far as ability to then pay for and create dignity through work and dignity through being able to have the system be out of the system and being able to meet their own payments and obligations. So it doesn't try and manipulate the whole system within the state of Oregon as much as it does to hang up the welcome to Oregon for your business kind of an opportunity to put these good people back into employable situations.
None. Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Butler and Mr. Burton. Did anyone else come to testify on House Bill 3770? Okay, so we will close the public hearing on House Bill 3770, and we will open a public hearing on House Bill 3640. Ed, do you want to tell us what's going on with that one?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3640 creates an income tax credit for monetary contributions to homeless shelters, food kitchens, and food banks, if they're eligible to receive tax deductible contributions under Internal Revenue Code Section 170. For individuals, the maximum credit is 50% of contributions up to a $100 max or $200 max for joint returns. For estates or trusts, the maximum credit is 10% of contributions up to $5,000. The non-refundable credit with a five-year carry forward. The language in the bill states that either the tax deduction, which is available under current law, or the tax credit in this bill can be claimed, but not both. And it applies beginning the 2002 tax year.
Ed, it shows that we held a public hearing on 427. Was that for the purpose of having a first hearing only?
So we have a constituent who came in. Constituent came to testify.
Oh, okay. I don't have any information on that. All right. So we did have a hearing on it once, but this is the second hearing.
That's correct.
Okay. Mr. Castagna, would you come up and talk to us about this bill?
Okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Bob Castagna, representing the Oregon Catholic Conference. The Oregon Catholic Conference would like to go on record in support of House Bill 3640. We have testified in favor of other tax credits this session. Our priority order of preference